Good morning and welcome to the latest episode of the Foul Ball Area Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Atkins. Thank you for tuning in today and listening to what I have to say about what's going on in the world of baseball over the next couple of minutes. Going to kick off the weekend. It's Foul Ball Friday, so that's the thing, actually. Get all my friends that have their Foul Ball Area shirts to wear them every Friday. We call it Foul Ball Friday. So if you're out there and you have a Foul Ball Area shirt, hope you're wearing it today in the spirit of the podcast. But thank you for tuning in. Got some stuff to talk about real quick before we dive into the topics at hand today. The usual reminder that you can find the podcast on SoundCloud or iTunes. Either way is a fine way to listen. On iTunes, you can subscribe to the podcast and download it. On SoundCloud, you can just listen right on your internet browser. So either way is perfectly fine. Also, make sure to follow us on social media, on Twitter and Facebook. Search Foul Ball Area. Give us a like and a follow. And check out our beautiful website, foulballarea.com. Last week was a pretty good episode. I think it was one of my favorite episodes that I've ever put out, actually. I had former RCBL commissioner and current Woodstock River Bandits head coach Mike Bocock on with me, and I had RCBL lifer Zach Stiles, recently retired, one of the greatest to ever do it, really. Played in over 350 consecutive games for Shenandoah and Newmarket, finished out his career with 11 years with the Newmarket Shockers. So I talked to him last week. You can find that on our SoundCloud and iTunes channels or right here at foulballarea.com. So make sure to give that a listen if you haven't already. This week, I'm going to dive right into it. We're continuing our icon series with another recent retiree from the RCBL. So I've got Ryan Cooper on the phone now. Ryan, of course, the longtime Stewart's Draft Diamondbacks pitcher, first baseman, kind of a utility man for the Diamondbacks over the past couple of years. And Ryan, you were almost really the face of the franchise for Stewart's Draft for a while, and now you're most likely calling it a career after the season. But just looking back on your career, what's it feel like to kind of represent Stewart's Draft and that community and that team for so long?
Well, Matt, I appreciate you having me on. And I just wanted to say that I love Stewart's Draft with all my heart. I was born and raised in Stewart's Draft. And when I got an opportunity to play for Tinker Kaiser, it was an honor. And it was, you know, Tinker was my coach when I was, like 6-7 years since I was a little kid, 7 years old, I'd say. And so if I had to really, you know, it was a really cool opportunity to play for Tinker again. So during that time, I think that if I could represent my town in a positive way, then I'm flattered and honored to do that, because Stewart's Draft is an awesome town, awesome baseball town. And I was really, really happy to be a part of that. You know, I've seen a lot of different baseball towns, and the amount of support and that our community gave us in Stewart's Draft, or gives us, I'm sorry, is just, it's second to none. And I'm including Clover Hill and everything else. We had an awesome environment, especially when we were winning championships. So I'm really thankful to have the opportunity to play at Stewart's Draft.
So obviously, in your career with Stewart's Draft, you won 4 championships, 4 out of 5 years winning championships in the league from, I think, started in 2012, correct?
Yes, sir.
So 2012, 13, 14, and then 16, those 4 championship years. What did it mean to you to be able to take the Diamondbacks team to prominence and win all those championships?
Well, it was, you know, we had our best years at the same time that Clover Hill was having a lot of their best years. So Clover Hill was a power to be reckoned with, and so they definitely made it difficult. And I felt like a lot of times with us being out of the county and Augusta County, we were almost like the black sheep, it seemed like, of the league. People didn't like seeing us being successful, but I was proud of my team, proud of my teammates, proud to put that uniform on every night. So I think it's really, really cool to think back fondly, sometimes not so fondly, on some of those matchups we had with Clover Hill and how they were right in their prime when we were in our prime. They never made it easy.
Clover Hill, of course, did have some pretty good years, like you said, and you guys played them in the finals a couple of years. A lot of people kind of saw that as a rivalry due to you guys being the two best teams and playing each other in the championship series. Did you ever think it was a rivalry between you guys and the Bucks?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think they would be lying if they said they didn't also view it as a rivalry. I mean, every time I left Buck Bowman Park, I mean, I was rarely in a good mood afterwards, you know, because it's really hard to win up there. So every time we go up there, I was ready for a battle, and it was absolutely a rivalry. You know, all the way back to, you know, there's guys that we still laugh about to this day that I couldn't stand seeing on a ball field. But, you know, obviously I have utmost respect for guys like Addison Bowman and Shane Banks and those, and Christian Simmers. Those guys were quite a team. And we always felt like we were the Joker to their Batman. It seems like everybody wanted Clover Hill, and it seems like we always felt like we were the ones that rained on people's parade whenever we could beat Clover Hill, and sometimes it felt pretty good.
So like I said, you have 4 championships in your career, and if you had to choose one, is there any one that really stands out that's kind of your favorite championship to win throughout those 4 that you ended up winning?
Well, you know, the first one was obviously because we had gone to the championship every year for the previous, I want to say, 4 or 5 years before that, and we'd gone, and then we lost to Clover Hill. So the first one was really satisfying, but I got to tell you, it was that first championship was after Bridgewater had knocked off Clover Hill earlier in the playoffs, so we never even got to face Clover Hill. So it was really, really cool to win that first championship, but I feel like those guys at Clover Hill didn't really give us credit for it because, you know, we didn't beat them. So the next year we faced off with them. And I think that might have been the best one because we beat Clover Hill. We finally got over that hump because they had beaten us so many years in those playoffs. And we kind of finally got over that hump to show ourselves that we could actually do it. So I'd say that second one, which was 2013, pick one.
So this question might be kind of tough also, but looking back on your career, you've obviously got a lot of highlights, a lot of good moments, but is there any one moment that kind of stands out to you from your career?
If I could harken my way back to when I played for Elkton when I first started, and I remember I went to Elkton because Fishersville Rangers had they didn't really need a first baseman. They really weren't that interested in me back when Coach Weiss had Fishersville out there playing at Wilson High School. And I remember playing them up at Elkton one year. It was the first year that I got on Elkton's team, and I was pitching. You know, I was throwing submarine. I couldn't break a pane of glass with a fastball. And I was having an awesome game. I had I was striking guys out. Guys were rolling over to third base. And I think I had, you know, I limited them to a couple of, you know, hits here and there. But they could not do anything off of me. And I got up to hit. I hit a grand slam that game, you know, and I was, you know, hitting it out of Elkton. You take it with a grain of salt. But still, I remember playing against this team that hadn't really – acted like they were interested in me, and I was playing for Elkton, and I remember looking over at Coach Weiss. He was coaching third while I was pitching, and he yelled across the field. He said, "Why the heck ain't you over here playing for us?" And I remember just that was such a cool feeling to think that I could actually stick it to some of the guys that didn't really want me.
I'm sure that was a cool feeling.
And then I guess that was kind of the beginning, and I think one of the coolest moments that nobody even – when it happened, nobody realized, but I'd say last year I finished tied for stolen bases in the league, and there was one time that I stole second, third, and home all in the same trip around the bases, and I think when it happened, nobody realized it, but that was a cool experience to say that I was able to do that.
Yeah, that does sound cool.
The steal of home was, you know, first and third guy gets off second base, gets trapped in a rundown, I take off for home. So it wasn't like a straight steal, but it goes down in the book as a stolen base, and I was pretty proud of that because, you know, I'm not exactly the most fleet of foot.
Yeah, that's always an exciting play, though, stealing home.
Yeah.
So during your kind of the championship run, those years in Stewart's draft, I think you mentioned this earlier, you played with a lot of the same guys. I think it was there was you, Wes DeMitt, Brandon Clark, Jay Thompson, probably some other guys that I can't name off the top of my head right now. But what was it like playing with those same guys and kind of, you know, building up relationships and the camaraderie over the years?
Yeah, it was really cool. You know, Jay and Wes, I would consider them some of my best friends. And Clark, you know, we sure did miss him. I love Clark too, but you know, that little stinker left us high and dry this year, and not that Wes didn't either. But yeah, we were left without those guys, and it really hurt. Those were really, really cool years, and I think that's one thing that was missing this last year that really left a big void in the season. I felt like something was missing. And of course, when the wins are harder to come by, it might feel like that too. But you know, I think in retrospect, it's guys like Jeremy Fitzgerald that we had for a couple of years, and Wes Dimmitt and Brandon Clark. Well, not even retrospect, we knew it at the time. Those are really, really hard guys to replace. And I miss them on the field. And, you know, when I see them, it's all good. No hard feelings, but I really miss those guys.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, watching your last couple of games this year, that playoff series against Bridgewater, I mean, you fought until the end. That game one against Bridgewater was one of the most exciting games I've ever seen in the RCBO. And I think you threw over 130 pitches in that game. It was just a great game all around. And you never quit right up until the end.
Well, going into that series, I knew in the back of my head that there was a really good chance that might be the last series I ever play on a baseball diamond. And so it was really, you know, all season I felt that. But going into that series, I was really magnified every chance I got to hit. And then obviously that last start, it was game one. So, you know, there was no way that I was going to let that coach take me out of that, even though it was 11 innings. And besides that, I look across the diamond and I see one of our old friends, Derek Shiflett. I know he's not coming out. So if I could say that was my last start in my career, I think I would be okay with that.
Well, Ryan, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk to me, recap your career a little bit. Congratulations on a fantastic career. And I'm sure we'll see your picture hanging up in the Hall of Fame Sports Grill someday.
Well, that would be quite an honor, Matt. I appreciate the spending some time with me here today.
All right, thank you. Ryan Cooper, my guest. Recent retiree, Stewart's draft, Diamondbacks, all-time great. 4 championships in his career. Almost for sure a future RCBL Hall of Famer. Since I've been doing these Icons interviews, and since last week I talked to Mike Bocock also, I've been kind of reflecting on this past year and the RCBL and thinking about everything that happened, especially from a media standpoint. Because we had a very successful year, media-wise, in the RCBL this year. The first and biggest thing, I think, is that we had game stories almost every night on the website. We had a writer, whether it was myself or Dwyer or Nick, at a game almost every night, and game stories up on the website the next morning. And I thought that was huge. Because we were putting out personal stories with interviews and details right from the field, and putting that up on our website for all our readers to see. No one else was doing that. So we had those game stories for everyone to read. Second, I think our social media presence was amped up even more than last summer. It was huge this year, especially with the help of the Mic'd Up Manager videos and a couple other videos we did throughout the summer. But I thought those were really big. And I thought that just our overall social media presence with the Instagram stories, the Twitter feed, and the Facebook was just amped up a little bit. So I thought that was huge. Another one of the ways that we kind of improved our media this year was we had 4 ways that people could listen to game broadcasts throughout the season. We had the usual ESPN Harrisonburg broadcasts. We had the Broadway Bruins Network. We had the RCBL Online Game of the Week. And we had the Stewart's Draft Diamondbacks broadcast on the ESPN station in Stanton. So 4 ways that people could listen to game broadcasts throughout the season. I thought that was big. Anyone, anywhere around the league could listen to a game on any given night. And I thought that was one of the biggest things this season that we had going for us. And I also just want to give a huge shout out to all of our media partners that helped us out this summer. Huge thanks to Carl Magenhofer doing the Play Ball show every Saturday and doing the game broadcasts on ESPN Harrisonburg. Shout out to Dave Thomas getting interviews with coaches and players and having myself on the daily sports feed every day. That was huge, getting the word out about the league every week. And then the crew out of WHSV, they did a phenomenal job covering us throughout the season. They were at games very frequently. They provided great coverage of the regular season, the playoffs, the All-Star game. So fantastic job by WHSV, and I really appreciate the coverage that they gave us this summer. So really just thanks to all of our media partners that helped us out this summer with the RCBL. I think that you all did a fantastic job, and I think even ourselves, just the RCBL media staff, we really amped things up this summer, and I was really, really happy with the way things went. And I really, obviously, thank you to all the fans who were reading our game stories and listening to the podcast and listening to the broadcast. Obviously, it wouldn't be anything without you guys. So thank you to all the fans of the RCBL who made what we do possible this summer. I know that we all really enjoyed this summer, and we all really appreciate you guys' support. That's something that I've been wanting to say for a while. So with that out of the way, we're going to transition into some MLB talk. I have some my top three moments from the past week, and these are in no particular order. I'm not ranking them, but my top three moments from this past week. Number one, the Angels' Shohei Ohtani, the Japanese rookie pitcher DH phenom, he is going to need Tommy John surgery. His UCL is torn, and he's probably going to need Tommy John surgery, which is unfortunate. And, they shouldn't have brought him back so fast. He got injured early in the season, missed a lot of the season, and it was almost recommended at that time that he should get Tommy John surgery, but he didn't, and he came back, and he was playing all right. And then he got an MRI, and they saw that it's torn even more, so now he almost definitely needs Tommy John surgery, and it really is a shame because he's a really dynamic player, and now he won't be able to pitch until 2020. So it's really a shame. But on Wednesday, the day that they received that news that his UCL was torn, he goes 4-for-4 with two home runs in their game against the Rangers. That's got to be a top moment of this past week. I mean, the guy finds out that he has a torn UCL in his elbow, and then he steps up to the plate, goes 4-for-4 with two home runs. That's definitely number one top moment of the week. Number two of my top three moments of this past week, the Chicago Cubs playing at the Milwaukee Brewers this week, and Cole Hamill is talking some trash, saying it's not really much of a rivalry between Chicago and Milwaukee. And then Joe Maddon steps in, says that you can't just say that something's a rivalry, it has to be felt over time. Well, I think the Brewers felt those words, and they went out and took 2 out of 3 games from the Cubs. I mean, the Cubs go out there talking trash, and then they lose 2 out of 3 games to the Brewers. So that's pretty big for the Brewers, who are currently in a wild card spot, are going to make the playoffs if the season ended right now. And they're only 4 games behind the Cubs, so they could even win the National League Central. But to go out there and win 2 out of 3 from the Cubs after the Cubs are trash-talking, that's a top moment. And my number three top moment of the week, Ronald Acuna Jr. hit yet another leadoff home run in Wednesday's game against the Red Sox. It's his 8th leadoff home run of the season. New Braves franchise record, and he is very close to tying the all-time rookie record for leadoff home runs in a season. He is one away from the all-time record for leadoff home runs in a rookie season. That's 9, set by Chris Young in 2007. And that brings me to my something to say for this week's episode. Ronald Acuna Jr. should win the National League Rookie of the Year this season. Now, I want to preface this by saying I'm not just saying this because I'm a Braves fan. That's only part of the reason. Ronald Acuna Jr. has put together a very impressive rookie campaign, and obviously his competition for the Rookie of the Year award is Juan Soto of the Washington Nationals. Now, Juan Soto has put together a very impressive rookie year as well, but when it comes down to it, Ronald Acuna Jr. should win the Rookie of the Year award this season. If you look at their stats, Soto leads in batting average, on-base percentage, and on-base plus slugging. He's got very good numbers, especially for a 19-year-old. But Ronald Acuna Jr. leads in home runs, slugging percentage, stolen bases. He's far better defensively. He's a tremendous defensive player. And overall, his wins above replacement is higher. He's worth 3.9, and Juan Soto is worth 2.5. And that's something you have to take into account. That's a big stat when looking at awards. So that's something that you have to take into account when determining who's going to win the Rookie of the Year. Another thing, I know that Rookie of the Year is different from the MVP award, but I think you do have to take into account where the Braves are in their division. They're winning the division. The Nationals are in third place, and they're having a highly disappointing season. And obviously, that's not Juan Soto's fault. But I think you do have to take team performance overall into account when Ronald Acuña has helped lead the Braves to first place in the division. I think that definitely has to have an impact on the voting for the Rookie of the Year award. I know it's not an MVP award, but I think that still needs to be taken into account. Now, you can say that I'm just being a Braves homer, and that's fine. I may be wrong about this. Maybe Juan Soto will go out, and maybe he'll win the Rookie of the Year award. And it'd be perfectly fine if he did, because he has the numbers, he's had a great season, he'd be deserving of it. But when Ronald Acuña has a higher WAR, more home runs, better slugging percentage, and his team is winning the division, I think the award goes to him. That's all I've got for you on this episode of Foul Ball Area. Thank you for joining me, listening to my rambling on about Ronald Acuña and Shohei Ohtani and all the other stuff going on in the world of baseball right now. Once again, thank you to all the RCBL media partners who helped us this season and to the fans for listening to us and reading our writing on the website. We really appreciate it. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of Foul Ball Area. I'll see you next week.